It's waiting and I see it there. It's waiting in my rotten flesh. The devil is a patient man.
The Most Haunted Podcast on the internet. The 222 Paranormal Podcast with your hosts, Jenna Jo.
In the whole universe.
Haunted. Evil.
So haunted. Hi, Joe.
It is haunted. You come and visit us and you'll have haunted experiences.
Well, it will be paranormal. I will assure you of that. It will not be normal because there's nothing normal about this podcast. But it's amazing.
We.
Top five.
Are,
whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
The top five
in 2018, and we're waiting to see what the top five in the 2019 turn out to be.
I want to be number three.
Yeah, we're right behind
Tim Dennis.
Tim with what the hell's the name of his show?
Beyond the Silence? No.
Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness. I got that wrong. Sorry, Tim.
He was number one. Mysterious Universe was up there.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. We're...
And Jim...
Jim Harold's Paranormal Podcast.
And then us.
That's the original one I used to listen to all the time.
Yeah.
I need to start listening
to
him again.
That's great company we keep, Joseph.
I know.
That's incredible.
When I saw the list, I was like, okay, yeah. Very haunted.
Well, it's because of our listeners, you guys.
That's right.
You're amazing, and we love you, and keep listening. And I have got a ghosty ghost story for
Give
you guys.
It to me.
Okay, I know it's getting spooky time, right? We're getting close to Halloween.
Getting cold out.
I know. So, as you guys know, our ongoing saga with our parents. Mom broke her hip 2 months ago. She's recovered.
She needs to start using the cane more. She's walking around without the cane.
I know. You can't tell them nothing. They're very independent, right? And Dad's been, in and out of the hospital. He's, we've had some ups and downs. And we've called in hospice. And not to say that's end of life. It's just better care for him,
that's
right?
That's what I thought when Ma said, we're calling in hospice. I'm like, why? She's like, well, no, it's not. They don't just do end of life things. It's... better living.
Yeah, they centralize all his doctors and nurses and medicine, and so he doesn't have to go out to doctor's appointments, and they take care of everything.
Yeah. It's...
So, that being said, some of us kids in the family, there's six of us, right, are taking turns spending the night at Mom and Dad's. So, last night was my turn, and I was there, and I couldn't sleep, right? So, it's really hard because it's just their neighborhood's loud, and... I got one ear open, listening for Dad if he needs to get up. And Mom gets up like three times in the night and he gets up. And, it's like there's no sleep, right? So I'm laying on the couch because I was like, couldn't sleep in the little twin bed that they had bought for all of us to sleep in when we're over there. And I'm laying on the couch and I'm watching Ghost Brothers, their new show. And I don't know where they were at, but I was just kind of, playing on my phone, watching Ghost Brothers, and all of a sudden I hear this noise on the side of the house. And it wasn't like a quiet noise or like a street noise. It was right up against the house. I'm like, what the hell is that? And I was like, I heard it again. And I was like, what is that? And I look out the window and there's like my mom and dad's driveway and then the neighbor's house. It's very close. It's probably only, 10, 15 feet apart. And I see the shadow of the garbage can lid going up and going down, going up and going down. I'm thinking, somebody out there trying to steal their cans or something? And I thought, maybe it's a ghost. There's a ghost out there. I'm watching the ghost show. A ghost has followed me. And so I look out the window and I don't see anything. And I hear this noise again. And then, how you have that feeling like somebody's watching you?
Yeah.
Open the curtain. And I look out and these two eyes are staring at me. It's that raccoon that was on their porch.
Their pet raccoon.
Their pet raccoon was in their garbage can. Open the lid, close the lid. I'm like, you jerk. I almost said a bad word. So I flicked the light on. I tapped on the window and he ran away. But that was my ghost story.
That's our big ghost story of the week.
I was really hoping it was a ghost, but it wasn't. But just fun times, right?
But speaking of the Ghost Brothers.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
We just got back home last week from Michigan Paracon. Oh, my God. I still haven't unpacked.
I haven't either. I literally took my suitcase down today, and it's been, what, a week? Yeah. Over a week? And I opened the suitcase, and it's all smoky. Everything smells smoky because it's in a casino. It's at the Quaden. I always call it Kettowin, but Kettowin. I know that's wrong.
The Kettowin Casino.
In Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, which is at the very top of the top of Upper Peninsula. One of the top parts, right across from Canada.
It's the farthest you can go in Michigan without hitting Canada.
And, you know, we've talked about being at Michigan Paracon on the show many times because we've been there 3 years.
It is crazy.
This year was so much fun. It was incredible. The Ghost Brothers were like rock stars. Oh my God.
They come over to our table and Daylan wanted to come around and sit down and that. Mm-hmm. And there was this little lady, had to be in her 80s. And
you would have thought Mick Jagger was in front of her.
She hugged
Juwan.
Yeah, hugged Juwan so hard from the side. He could not move and he was like looking at us like.
She pulled his head down and was kissing him.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh. It was like the Beatles were there.
Yeah.
It was incredible. They were busy at their table all day long. They never stopped. I don't even think they got a break.
No. They wanted to do a segment with us for the show, but they never had time.
I know. But you know what? That's not a bad thing.
Oh.
They can call in any time. But I thought it was just amazing how much great response they have gotten to their show. And I really like this new season. It's a little different. It's more like, you know, they're going into residential's homes and helping people with, you know, issues in their house, which is really cool. I like that. Yeah. I saw two of the episodes so far this season.
I didn't get a chance to watch them yet because when I got the new roof put on, they moved my dish and I had to get it realigned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just put it off. And today I called to get it realigned and the lady's like, okay, turn your TV on. And it works. I'm like, oh. She's like, no, you don't need it done. I'm like, I've been sitting here for 3 weeks with no TV. But
way to go.
I just never have time to watch it anyways.
Who does, right? Like, you know, but with our lives.
Michigan Paracon. Oh, my God.
It was so much fun.
I bet you there was 2,000 people there if there wasn't any. I mean, it was so shoulder to shoulder. And
you know who was busy the entire time and never, ever, ever stopped was Dana and Greg from the Traveling Museum.
Yeah.
With their,
I didn't get a chance to talk to them. I walked by and told them we were going to dinner.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's as much as I told them.
Well, they premiered Hellier there.
Yeah.
And they had such an amazing response to that. And also, there was a wedding that took place.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Mark and Michelle. That was incredible. And, you know, just being able to hang out with, like, and see everybody, Rebecca, the Motor City Medium, and Black Swamp Paranormal, Nadine John. That was so much fun.
And Sarah from Paranormal XL stopped by the booth.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to meet her in person.
Mally Fox was there with her Paranormal Girl t-shirts. Tim Dennis.
Tim's a nut.
John Zaffis. I said, hi, Johnny. He didn't know who I was, but I was like.
Really?
Yeah, he smiled like, oh, hi.
I went down. I went up to the rooms, got cleaned up, and went down, and I caught a little bit of the karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
Or is it karaoke?
I don't know. It might be.
But they were singing the Ghostbusters theme. Oh, but instead of singing, who are you going to call Ghostbusters? There was like 12 guys. I think it was the Youpers. Mm-hmm. They were up on the stage thing, and they were singing, who are you going to call? John Zaffis. And the whole place was yelling, John Zaffis.
Oh, my gosh. Like, everybody was there. Chip Coffey was there. Daniel Klass from the Hinsdale House.
Yeah.
You know, our friend Scott from Ghostly Talk Radio was there. The Perrone family was there.
The whole family,
all the sisters, the dad who just had a birthday. Happy birthday, Roger. It was his birthday yesterday. Gosh, Amy and Adam were there from Kindred Spirits.
Amy Bruni.
Amy Bruni. Amy Allen, I think, showed up. I never saw her.
She did. I saw her.
I never saw her.
But I didn't get a chance to talk to her because when she showed up, her table was swamped with people. And then she left again.
Yeah.
It's like. So I didn't get a chance to talk to her.
Grant Wilson and his wife, Rena. I'm sorry. forgot her name, but were there.
Yeah.
Lovely people. Just really, really, really nice. Came over to the booth, said hi. Who else did we see? Oh, Nick Groff was there. Dustin Parry with his hair was there.
I finally got a chance to talk to Dustin. I was walking through the casino and he was standing at the bar that was inside the casino itself. And he was just standing there, so I walked up and we talked for a little bit. Cool dude.
Very nice.
Got a chance to talk to him. All the conventions we see him at, I never get a chance to talk to him, and so I just stopped.
All right, Dustin, this is a challenge. Next time we see you at a convention, coming on our show.
Yeah.
Buster. how could we forget?
I always forget.
Belanger.
Belanger was sitting right next to us, and he held a baby again.
Oh, my God. He looked like an actor. I said, Jeff, you got to get one of those. Yeah. He's like, I did this 12 years ago. Super cool. But, you know, even, you know, just thanks to everybody who stopped by the booth, who took the time to, you know, buy some merch from us, because we appreciate it. But we had a really, really interesting person stop by the booth, who is our interview today. You know, Joe and I got the pleasure of talking to this young man. Really, I can call him a young man because he's younger than us.
Yeah.
His name is James Anito, and just give you a little bit of his background.
All right. Tell me.
He is a demonologist and a deacon through the Old Catholic Church, who has worked alongside many other specialists in his fields. He's also a paranormal investigator researcher and co-leader of the Paranormal Specialty Crew, or the PSC.
PSC.
He's a member of the Sanctuary Paranormal and the former founder owner of the Dominion Ministry. He has been in the paranormal field since he was 15 years old. And, you know, now he's part of the clergy who is called in when there is an issue. And, you know, in his interview here, he explains, you know, what he does and how he does it and at what point that he comes in, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. So let's get into the interview here. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back after the interview.
And with us today, we have the one, the only, James Anito. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you for having me, guys.
Yes. So, James, we're here at Michigan Paracon 2019. Is this your first time at the convention?
It is, definitely.
What do you think so far?
It's such an amazing event. It's probably the biggest event I've ever done. It is pretty known to be the biggest event in the country, so it's pretty exciting to be here.
Isn't it great? Just the energy of everybody that's coming in and
oh, definitely.
Coming through and stopping at the booth and... Tell everybody a little bit why you're here and what you do.
Well, I had the fortune ability to be on the demonology panel yesterday with John Zaffis, Tim Shore, and Nick Groff. I am a deacon with the Catholic Church, and I'm also a demonologist. So I work and am the mediator for a lot of cases that are presented to me by either a client or investigating team. And I dissect it. I get if there's somebody that's possessed. Or dealing with certain things, I take all that documentation, I take all the case notes, and then I would present it to the church and then get the proper channels involved, such as an exorcist or something like that.
Okay. So typically when this happens, the first step is you would get a call from maybe a rectory or from a priest, or do the parishioners call you direct or whoever, not just a parishioner, but...
Yeah, so basically it would be the church would not necessarily... contact me. Basically how it happens, a client would reach out or investigating team would reach out. So if they would maybe be investigating a location, usually a home or a business, and they felt something that wasn't positive, it could be demonic, could be negative, could be an elemental, it could be something that they don't think they can handle or have no idea what they're handling, and then that's when they would call me to act in as maybe that mediator to maybe give a better idea or an understanding of what could be happening if they have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of teams that do reach out because they feel like at a certain point when they're investigating, they get data, and that data is something that they believe that what they've acquired, they can't handle that case, and then they would reach out to me. And usually more so it's a team than a client or a homeowner or a business owner that would contact me.
How do you get to become a demonologist? Like, you know, was there certain training that you had to go through, or was this something that you had been interested in pursued, or did it just fall in your lap because you are a deacon?
I studied demonology and was involved in demonology before I was even a deacon with the Catholic Church. Before I was a part of the Catholic Church, I was actually a deliverance minister for the Church of Christ, and the Catholic Church approached me about seminary.
Okay.
But I got into demonology basically on interest, and at one point I was disproving of God. It was a long journey, but really what was the turning point that really led me down that path is I'm from Rhode Island. And in Rhode Island, if you remember a show called Ghost Hunters.
No, never heard of it.
and also kidding. A few tables down, Andrea Perrin, The Conjuring
yes.
House.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had the fortunate ability to work with a man called Carl Johnson. And Carl Johnson, who is a demonologist, and Keith Johnson, his brother, who were the first investigators in The Conjuring House, Carl Johnson asked me to be his tech manager for his team. So that was really a very first introduction into the demonology realm and working with him on residential cases and that kind of aspect.
When you go in, I mean, do you assess the person first? Do you do a phone interview or do you meet them in person, not on the location? Or how do you begin the process?
So that's a good question. I usually do a 3-point interview process. I would do online, so email, a phone, and then an in-person interview. And the reason I do that 3-point interview process is because I want to see holes in their story, any mm-hmm. red flags, if their story changes, if their yeah. story changes, what part of the story changes. If it's what they're dealing with, if it's certain claims, then I can know. The biggest thing I look into for that interview process, and most of the time, I would say 99.9% of the time, if somebody says they are possessed, there is a good chance they are not, unless somebody has notified them that they are. Because most of the time, that somebody that is possessed doesn't know they are going through that affliction. So usually it would be an outside team or outside family member that would bring me in. So in that interview process, I make sure. And then, of course, when I physically get there. So if the phone interview and then the email interview kind of correlates, but then in the physical sense, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can see facial emotion. You can see how
okay.
people react.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a psychologist. I have no PhD. But I do work with psychologists. And I do work with primary care physicians, especially if in an aspect that they are claiming possession,
mm-hmm.
It is a requirement before an exorcism is done or an exorcist is involved that these people do have an evaluation and go through the proper channels of science and modern medicine before they even quote it to be supernatural or something demonic.
Okay. Yeah, because you would, you know, I mean, just from a person who's never done it or don't have that much knowledge of it, you would think that some type of mental evaluation would have to be done because there are a lot of mental illnesses that would maybe manifest across as somebody maybe having this because we just don't have the general public doesn't have a great understanding of mental illness.
Well, multiple personality disorder, which is known as dissociative identity disorder now, has a lot of very similarities, schizophrenia,
mm-hmm.
Manic episodes of bipolar 1 and 2, and many other disorders really simulate and are really characteristically similar to what a possessed individual would show in signs. But, of course, there is many signs out of the natural realm. My first possession case was actually a psychologist calling me in. So there are signs that, of course, they would look through. If you've ever read the DSM-5, you would instantly think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things in the DSM-5 that you cannot put towards that somebody would be possessed. But there's a lot of things that you have to go through. And usually when I deal with people, an evaluation by one person is not good enough. A true evaluation by a psychologist should be done by 3 psychologists or 2 psychologists because they are able to discuss and have their opinions. They're able to communicate and say, okay, this is what I think. And that person might say, oh, this is what I think. You should definitely check all the boxes and be very analytical before you jump to the paranormal, the supernatural, however you want to interpret it as, because there are so many natural occurrences that could occur.
Mm-hmm.
They could be taking a medication and they could be hallucinating. They could have mold in their house. Certain things that you have to look at in a natural sense through the natural laws before you ever go to that other realm.
I hate saying the term demonologist as a normal person, but because you have the training, and we talk to so many people that say, Well, he was possessed, so we did exorcism. I'm like, did you do the backstories? Did you? I mean, that's so important to do the backstories and learn who they are before.
Yeah.
Because if you go in blind, you're going to hurt them more than calling on someone that knows what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest debate, too, with exorcism is normal people trying to do the solemn mm-hmm. rite of exorcism. People don't understand that there is a process within the ritual and there's a process before the ritual, mm-hmm. like we had talked about. But a lot of people don't understand, you know, there is other aspects of exorcisms throughout many different religions, Hinduism being actually one of the first introductions to a very similar ritual, and Hinduism is the oldest modern-day religion. Judaism also has a very similar ritual. Ancient Egyptians used to have very similar rituals. But the problem is, in a Christian standpoint, and most times when you hear about exorcisms nowadays, are on a Catholic aspect.
Yeah,
a
Catholic style.
But people don't tend to forget, if you are just a normal person that does not know exorcisms or the backgrounds of it, people don't realize the reason that a priest or somebody that's properly trained, that is a priest that does it, is a mass is performed. You know, the Eucharist is given during the exorcism, so before or after. And the only person that truly can do the transubstantiation of, you know, the body of Christ and the blood of Christ is a priest.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to perform exorcisms and you're not clergy, you know, you're doing injustice to not only yourself and putting yourself in danger, but you're putting the people that you're supposed to be mm-hmm. helping, and you're leaving them at the end of the day, of course, and you're driving off. And you're doing them injustice.
Yeah, because you talk about, you know, we've mentioned about attachments before, and one of the worst forms of attachment is to try to do an exorcism. Someone, that demon or spirit or whatever is attached to that person, jumps into you. You're worse off.
Well, yeah, too. You got to remember that it doesn't. Of course, in the movies, you don't necessarily. I think the best movie that showed the rite of exorcism in the right way, it was the movie The Rite with Anthony Hopkins.
Okay.
Because a lot of the times exorcist will have an old priest that is very is somewhat familiarly trained, because at one point and during the ritual, the priest does ask for the spirit demonic entity to leave
mm-hmm.
and might necessarily jump into that person that's doing the exorcism.
Yeah.
And then that other priest is there just in case that does happen. So there's these things, like these processes that are there, and a lot of people don't know the backgrounds, the processes, and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
How often does this happen? I mean, like, is this a rarity that you get all the way to the process of exorcism? I mean, is generally most of it just an attachment and you're able to get rid of it? I mean...
Statistically, on my aspect, you know, I'm very analytical. I approach things a lot different than some. There's a lot of people out there, and I'm not a judgmental person, but there's people out there that would say something's demonic every case that
right,
I experience.
Right.
I've done this for 15 years, and I've been doing ministry work for 9 years with the demonology realm of it as well. And I've only ever come across 5 true demonic cases that I would equivocally say that are demonic. And out of the 5 of those cases, 3 were possession.
Wow. And possession is the highest level?
Yeah, it goes infestation,
mm-hmm.
it goes oppression, there is obsession. There, some people aren't oppressed. They want it. They're obsessed about it. And then there's possession. Possession is separated in 2 categories. Transient possession, which the demonic entity comes and goes because that free will within that person is still battling. They're still battling, and they're still being able to take over their consciousness. The other form of possession is perfect or true possession, where that entity has full claim to that person, and that person is no longer able to fight. And within that time, and that's even rarer than a transient possession, in perfect possession, that person's body starts to wither away because they're a vegetable,
yeah,
in a way, mm-hmm. and so they don't have control of themselves anymore. And in that time of a perfect possession, it is a very you need to introduce it fast, because if not, that person most likely will die of malnutrition and will die of some sort of maybe cancer or something like that, because your body starts to wither away with so much negativity in you. You think about stress and anxiety, what it can do to you. Just think of this, what we would call pure evil
mm-hmm.
within you and pertaining into you. What would that do to you?
Yeah, and they don't understand what's happening to them.
Yeah.
you know, so they have to bring in someone. But, you know, we see a lot of exorcisms on TV and all that. And how close is that to reality? I mean, I've heard that eye colors change, facial expression changes to where not just expression, but the actual almost bone structure looks like it changes and that. How close is that to reality?
The heads don't spin and the pea soup doesn't happen. that would be pretty scary, actually. Even more scary than, of course, the things that have happened. But in my very first possession case, where I actually didn't truly believe in demons until I got involved in that case and I experienced what I did. And it didn't, you know, it scarred me, but it actually made my connection to my higher power stronger mm-hmm. because it solidified that evil does exist.
Okay.
But in that case, the eyes did go black.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't always happen,
mm-hmm.
But the eyes did go black. A triangulation of the face happened, so the bone structure of the cheek started pointing out. And what you call superhuman strength, or some people would say maybe adrenaline, but mm-hmm. Superhuman strength, because in that case, in scenario, this individual who was 22 years old, and I can't give names and go into too much details, of course, but this person was held down by 200-300-pound guys and was able to dislocate his shoulder and grab me.
Wow.
And I have a set of rosaries on my table before we break down if anybody's interested, of course, but he was able to grab me and able to get free from those guys for just that quick second. They able to grab me during the deliverance ritual. It was only a deliverance that night.
Okay.
Because the person was starting to turn. And in that case, you know, I'm not a priest. I'm a deacon. Mm-hmm. So I don't have the training to perform exorcisms. So I can perform deliverances, and that's what I did. And it was able to subside the individual for that time being.
How long usually is a, I don't want to say standard, but how long is a standard exorcism ritual that, you know, I mean, it may vary on person depending on how much possession they have, but on average, how long does it usually last?
It could be days of a priest coming. It could be months. It could be years. There's been cases where exorcism's been performed multiple times. People tend to forget what exorcisms are, and many people tend to forget history. Hippocrates, and I've been talking about this a lot lately.
Okay.
Hippocrates, who is the father of medicine, performed exorcisms because it is a psychotherapy.
Okay.
So the problem with exorcisms is there is the invocation, and you do bring in a higher power. But if you don't have faith in that, that is null and void. So even many people don't understand is you have to request the solemn rite. You don't just perform the exorcism on the person. The person has to request it. They want it. They need mm-hmm. it. They're required to ask. If they don't ask, they don't get it.
Mm.
Because they have to have that fight. They can't play the victim role. But even though some people ask, they don't change their lifestyle. Like for somebody that, you know, drinks, smokes, does bad things,
mm-hmm.
when you go through that exorcism, you have to change your lifestyle. You have to change who you are. You have to be a positive person every day, because one little hiccup could mean this entity coming back, which it has.
Mm-hmm.
A perfect example of it not coming back was the most infamous case of them all, The Exorcist. Roland Robbie, or however you want to interpret it, that's mm-hmm. not, of course, his real name.
Yeah.
He actually was able to overcome it, and there have been people that have been able to speak to him, like a Christopher St. Booth, who did a book and the documentary on it. But he's lived a perfect life ever since that, because he has changed his life. He's lived those circumstances, you know, he's lived that change. He mm-hmm. listened to the advice, but some people don't, and some people falter, and that's when the exorcism has to be done again, because it is a fight of free will. You know, like I said, a transient possession, the entity comes back and forth because that battle of free will is there. That person's trying to fight for their life, trying to fight for their body,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes we give up. We're human, you know. We are weak sometimes,
yeah,
and that person has to be strong enough to overcome it. And until that exorcism is successful with that person overcoming it and is able to change their life, then until that happens, an exorcism keeps going and going and going. But, of course, in cases like Annalise Mackell, or a year ago in Germany, there have been deaths, because the body can only take so much as well.
And those evil entities, have you seen where they actually keep the person down so that they can stay with that person? Like, they keep them drinking, keep them doing drugs, keep their energy level down?
Of course, you know, I like to relate a demon to drugs.
Okay.
Right? You know, the chasing the dragon. You want to get that high every time, and you want to keep getting that high, and it's not the same high every time, right? So a demon can influence you and put you, say, you need this, and keep putting you down. That is their goal. That is that they want to not... They don't want them to be helped, so they're going to keep putting these thoughts and this mindset into them. And most times it does happen that way. And back to the drug idea is, it's like an intervention. Mm-hmm. You know, the drug could keep telling this, you know, drug through the side effects, through the neural waves and the chemical reactions, you know, could keep saying, oh, you want this, the addiction.
Yeah.
But until you beat that, that addiction's going to keep warranting you want to take drugs.
Mm-hmm. Now do the... I don't know if we say demon or evil spirits or that, but what is their end game? What do they get out of this? Do they create more demons through, like, if the person passes away or that?
Well, their initial goal is not to kill the human. Okay. It is to make mockery of the human, because if you look at the biblical nature of scripture, and there's many different religions, demons more so, of course the Christian aspect, but the word demon comes from daemon, which is a Greek word. And in Greek mythology, a daemon was like of a watcher of the gods. And they would basically spy on humans. And if a human did something in favor of a god, they would go back to the gods and the gods would punish them.
Okay.
So that's where the word demon comes from. So the idea of and the concept of evil has been around for a long time. Even though daemons were benevolent, they weren't evil entities. But demons, and so to say... We just want to make mockery of humans, mm-hmm. because if you look at what God, when God created us, he gave us the ability of free will. He gave us a physical body. Mm-hmm. Demons never had a physical body.
Okay.
They are pure energy form, just like an angel. Angel weren't physical either. They are pure spirit form. And that, in case, is what they say through many centuries of theological debate, is that these demons are mad that they were never able to live and breathe like us humans. So when they fell from the graces of God, it was because of that nature that God wasn't willing to give the same aspect of creation as he did to humans.
Oh, okay.
So if they are an energy form, when they manifest, do you physically see them? If they come out or you get them out, can you see them? Like, do they take any type of form? Have you personally seen them?
I've never personally seen a demon. I worked a case where a shadow figure of almost 7-foot proportion was captured, and that was a very hectic case. It was actually on television. I wasn't a part of it. I don't do television stuff. I feel like those sessions are intimate, so the person that goes through that, it is up to the team and, of course, the client to put out their story. Yeah. It's not my ability to do so. I'd rather not.
Yeah.
But you got to remember... the perfect example, especially for people that don't understand demons, is we look at pop culture. It is a recent phenomenon again because of the new movies. Mm-hmm. It is an interdimensional being, which you could call a demon, because in technicality, if you say they linger in hell, that is another dimension in a way. So it plays your fears, right? It appeared as a spider, appeared as the clown. So a demon doesn't have a physicality, but what it does, it appears to people in the way that they interpret it or how it wants to be shown. And in most times, it is not shown in an evil standard. They will mock you. They will play with you. They will play in the shadows. At first, during the infestation stage, they appear as maybe a human. But they can't appear as a perfect human apparition. So there'll be disfigurements. There'll be something missing because they aren't able to take on that full form. But, you know, people have seen the goat head, the goat body.
Yeah.
But that is because that is interpretation of what we understand. So like with an angel, a perfect example of that with angelology. If you ask many different psychic mediums or mediums that use archangels, right? And they all have a different interpretation of what Michael looks like when he appears to them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
What happens, where do they go once you've extracted them from a person? Like, are they just roaming among us, or are they coming through portals, or, are, you know, where are they, and what happens when we get them out?
I think that's the biggest question and biggest one of the biggest debates.
Yeah, I'm sure you get that a lot.
Yeah, no, you know, and within the Bible and of course within some theological scripture, it says that they go to the place of everlasting lake of fire. But you also got to understand, like I said earlier, is that you could perform an exorcism, things could be good for months, years, and then they fall off that horse, and that that same demonic entity can come back. Because they're predators. And with any predator, when it has a prey, it will hunt that prey right. until that prey is no longer able to be within their mm-hmm. confines, within their claws. So where they go, I don't necessarily know when they're expelled. But all I know is that they're not able to enter into a person or a property as long as that person keeps up their maintenance of their house. But maybe one day we will find out. But I don't think we truly will. I think it will always be a debate. Because theology in itself, which demonology comes from, is centuries old.
How do you protect yourself from getting attached? I mean, we're in this field. We're in the paranormal field. People are, you know, toting haunted objects or things like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I don't want to, like, walk into this old, you know, historic mansion and all of a sudden, boom, I'm in a, yep. and you know, like, hey, there's a victim for me.
Well,
not to make light of it, but, you know, like.
But there's multiple things you can do. You know, you can wear your items, of course, your religious items or your blessed items. And I tell people, though, that isn't the only thing that will stop it. It's like I was in the military. I was in the Army, right? So I never went overseas, but I did lose some battle buddies over there. And I use the analogy, you could put your body armor on, your bulletproof vest and your ACH helmet. And you can go over there and get shot by a bullet and you die. Mm-hmm. And it didn't protect you. It's the same thing with your crucifixes, your rosaries, or your stones or your crystals. You can have that, but doesn't mean that you're untouchable. The biggest thing I tell people, and I think that is the best advice you can give people, is I believe in two things within this field, and it's the laws of intent, laws of attraction. You go into these places with the best intent, with positive attraction, and you will usually receive positivity back. And you'll usually, if you have good intent, you won't have anything negative drawn towards you.
Yeah.
That is the most powerful thing. You know, a good thing is also mind over matter. I tell a lot of people, if you have things going on in life, personal, you're sick, you shouldn't go investigate. You shouldn't deal with those cases because you aren't mentally there fully. And you need to always be, especially in these kind of cases, you always need to be 100% there. Because if you're not, you're not just doing yourself harm, you could also do the client, your team, harm as well, because you're dealing with a situation that you really need to fully be there. And another big thing, of course, is, and it doesn't have to be, I know some people don't believe in God or don't believe in some aspect of higher power if you're agnostic or atheist, but faith is powerful.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't really understand the human mind, and I'm not a psychologist, I don't have a PhD, but I work with a lot of psychologists. I read a lot of books on psychology. I took some classes when I went to school for business. And, of course, I've taken some classes when I went through seminary as well. And still am in seminary because I'm only a deacon. But people tend to forget we have a component of our brain that's centralized on faith. Why do we have that? Mm-hmm. Why is that there? So faith is powerful. You have to have faith in something, especially to deal with stuff like that. Because if you don't, what's your backbone?
Yeah.
Can multiple demons possess one person?
That's actually a good question. In most cases, there are multiple demons involved. It's not just one. Usually, there is the more so higher entity, and then there's lessers as well, minions, we like to call them. Hmm. But in most cases, there are multiple demonic entities present.
Don't take this wrong. Who do they report to? Like, who is directing them to do this?
Well, if we look at the hierarchy, and there's many hierarchies of demonic folklore, of course, that would be the one person we would call Lucifer.
Okay.
And supposedly that is who they... But if you look at them falling from the graces of God, I don't really think they report to anybody. Because if you're evil, right? If you're an evil person... Do you think an evil person is going to report to somebody? In some cases, like maybe like the mob or some situations, but I really feel like they're just in it for themselves.
Oh, okay.
But that's also opinion, that's theory, because there's no facts to this field. We like to try to play facts to what we do, but unfortunately there is none.
Yeah, because I was thinking about that earlier. It's almost like with angels. Of course, angels will report to God or, you know.
But usually the archangels.
Archangels, yep. Okay. And with angels, there's different levels in that.
Yep.
And then, but with the way you're describing with the demons and that, they're all on their own. So that kind of throws a wrench in what I was thinking of. Like Jen was asking who they report to. It's almost like there's hierarchies to that. And to me, each level would have to, you know, check in or whatever with the higher person or demon above them. But with the way that you just described that, it kind of makes sense that they don't report to anybody because they're by themselves. You know, that's,
yeah, no,
I definitely never thought of it that way. That's why.
There's the hierarchy system, but I take into the account that they don't care.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, this goes along with like multiple demons. You said that, you know, one person could have multiple demons. Do they find each other, gang up, and then find just the weak and go after them? Or I don't know. It's just, you know,
that's a hard question. You know, people always say, do they go after the weakest? Do they go after the feeble-minded? You got to remember, if you follow Catholicism, Padre Pio is a perfect example. He was demonically oppressed most of his life. And that was one of his miracles, that he never subdued to that. He always believed in God. And every day he lived through that oppression and he battled that and he never gave up. That's why one of those things is of a miracle.
Is he an incorruptible saint?
Yeah, he performed the three. Yeah, incorruptible saint. Yeah.
Okay.
He never took away from agape, which is the true love of God. He never submitted to something else. So in that case, he never submitted.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, in your experience, Joe, if you got another question, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I got to chew on this one for a minute.
I've just got so many questions about angels and all that, but that will be for another show.
Yeah.
It is a long discussion.
It is.
Like, theology has been debated for centuries.
Right.
Yeah, because you think about, you know, they talk about the angels are at war with the demons, and you think, okay, it almost is like a military thing where you have your captains, you have your, you know, soldiers. And every time I hear that about the angels, it kind of makes me wonder, because we look at angels as just angels.
Yep.
And I mean, I hate to say it this way, because I don't know if I don't be offended or that, but it almost seems like they're alien in type, because there's different levels and sergeants, and you know what I mean? Because we hear about that all the time, that they're always
like
battling
the cherubs and the, yeah,
yeah, yeah, they're always battling the dark side.
Well, I think it's in a way of interpretation.
Okay.
You know, we must understand that life is a balance, mm-hmm, of good and evil. For there to be good, there has to be evil. And without good, there would never be evil. You know, it's that balance, that war between good and evil,
yeah,
that occurs because that's just how life is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a perfect example of Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
The light side versus the dark, mm-hmm, side. You know, the Jedi were very peaceful people, right? The Jedi code, you know, and people are like, what has that had to do with anything? But George Lucas took a lot of interpretation in Star Wars from the Bible.
Yeah.
And even though the Jedi were peaceful, they would still kill the Sith.
Were training for war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's in that same concept.
Okay.
You know, that there's that fight, you know, before these fallen angels fell from the grace of God, there was not necessarily the concept of evil,
mm-hmm,
you know? And when they fell, that's when you had that rift.
Okay. Yeah.
If somebody thinks that they have, or feels like they have a loved one that may be possessed, what should they do first? Should they try to self-evaluate? Should they call you? I mean, you know, if it, maybe it's just something small, but they think it's big. Like, would you rather them come to you and you just miss it? Or would you rather them try to figure it out on their own and then, if it gets too bad, come to you?
Well, if they have all the characteristical signs, and I think they should reach. I usually tell people to not reach out to a local team unless it's dire and mm-hmm. the team needs to get out there, assess the situation, and then maybe get me involved as soon as possible. But usually my advice is to contact their local diocese.
Okay.
And if the local diocese is not willing to help them, then that is when we fast pace and I will get a team out there. I won't go out into a location until I have a team that has assessed the and collected data, because I do this for free. I'm not going to waste my time.
Yeah, going to every single person who has a small issue.
Yeah, I have a son, and I have a career outside of being clergy, so I cannot always take time away. So I would contact the team mm-hmm. if the diocese wasn't able to help, and the team that I would have full respect for have worked on cases for me before or have brought me into cases and have worked cases right, I'd get them involved as soon as possible. And usually within a week, they'd probably be out to go assess the situation. And if that team feels like there is something really, truly at play, then I will do my process ASAP.
Yeah. Check their mental status and everything. And
yes. Especially if they're claiming possession. Yeah, yeah. If they claim a possession, they have to get evaluation. Mm-hmm. They have to go see a doctor before the church here ever gets involved. Because there's liabilities with dealing with people.
Oh, yeah.
I carry liability insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I go in people's houses. What happens if I trip and fall?
Yeah.
You know, what happens if they trip and fall or I'm doing something and they get hurt?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of liability to what you do, so you have to go through these processes.
Yeah, it's sort of like your own protection, just like we talked earlier. Yeah.
James, if somebody needed your help, how would they get a hold of you?
There's multiple avenues. You can reach me on Facebook, James Anitto, A-N-N-I-T-T-O, my website, jamesanitto.com, or you can even reach me at 401-808-7416. That's my personal number. As long as you don't call me at 2 a.m. in the morning,
right,
I will pick up and I will, I counsel people, people even not dealing with demons. I do mm-hmm. spiritual counseling. If somebody is suicidal, I'll talk to them as well. So anytime, reach out. I'm willing to talk to anybody, even if it might not be something paranormal. I'm willing to sit down and talk to them and then give them the proper avenues to go to.
Yeah, we have to have another discussion just on angels too,
yeah.
Because we always like to balance, like, we talk about this, but let's talk about the positive aspects of angels in our next conversation, James.
Oh, definitely. I would love to, and thank you for having me on, guys.
Yes, we really appreciate you coming on. Everybody, check James out. If you need his help, go to his website. Joe, final thoughts?
No, just thank you for coming on. It was really nice to meet
you.
I'm glad we met you.
Yeah, we learned a lot.
And we hope to have you on many more times.
Perfect. Hope to hear from you guys.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good night.
Okay. So that was great.
So cool.
It was so interesting.
Yeah.
Everybody we interview is interesting.
Well, they do.
And what's cool is he just didn't end the interview. I know we stopped recording, but we sat there and talked for a little bit after. It's like, that's what's so cool about meeting people at the conventions is they're so laid back, and you think that whether they're celebrities or that, you think they're going to be kind of stuck up in that, but they're not. I'm telling you, go to these conventions, and you'll find out that these people are just down-to-earth, awesome people.
You know, that's why I love going to the conventions. You can learn so much because you only see a little snippet of people's lives on these television shows that they're on or maybe a podcast you listen to. But just to get out and hang out with them and have a drink and just chill out and say hello, and taking the time to stop at people's booths and a lot of times people have books they're writing and what's your new take? What's going on in your world? What's new? What's the latest ghost story? That's what's great about it.
Yeah.
And that would be a great reason to come to our convention, Joe.
Yes, we're working hard on getting this together and getting some great
Joe is
vendors
pounding the pavement here, but he's done a really great job. Joe has gotten us some really cool door prizes. So we're going to have extra door prizes to be able to hand out.
I'm hoping to get more door prizes than what we have people. So that's, 600 door prizes?
Let's do it.
Hopefully we have enough that we can pass out to all the vendors because we want to treat the vendors really good.
Yeah, so, it's going to be an amazing day.
May leave.
Mm-hmm.
With more stuff than what you would pay to get in.
Listen.
I didn't know how to say that.
That's fine. So, if you buy a pre-sale ticket, you're going to get a free raffle ticket for this giant goodie basket that I'm putting together.
Which reminds me, I have something for you.
Yay!
A, a carved Bigfoot.
Ooh.
It's little, but it's carved Bigfoot with a certificate of authenticity that's going to, we got to put in the basket.
Nice.
From the artist.
Yeah. So, you know, come on out, hang out with us, listen to some awesome speakers, great vendors. There's going to be a couple Reiki people there, some readers. So
Reiki?
Yeah.
I've got acorns this year. They can Reiki my lawn all they want.
Oh, they come Reiki. No, but, you know, it's going to be a really fun time. Learn some things about cryptids, some things about ghosts, some things
about Bigfoot.
And, you know, just general shenanigans, yep. Right? Like, it's cool. It's a family-friendly event, so make sure you bring up the fam. And
any information you want to know about it, go to our website and click on Bigfoot Convention. We still have a few vendor spots open, so if you want to be a vendor, get on there and get your form in ASAP because they are selling out.
Yeah, so like if you're an author or, you know, maybe you sell like cool crystals or jewelry or you have a paranormal team or a haunted car. I don't know.
But we're looking for more of Bigfoot authors. So if you know any Bigfoot authors out there, tell them we're looking for them.
Yeah, send them our way.
Because we need some good authors there.
Yeah.
So. Definitely. Otherwise than that, thanks for listening this week. Tune in next week. Next week, we're going to have a great show.
Stay tuned.
Surprise guest, medium, Tim Shaw will be on the show. And he's crazy.
We loved him. All right, everybody. Thanks, James and Nito, for being on the show. We'll talk to everybody next week.
All right. Goodbye. Let's listen to a little bit of Crud.
Out of Detroit. Woo. Yeah.
Waiting in my, I don't care.
I don't.
Goodbye.
He's waiting and I see you stare. He's waiting in my rotten flesh. The devil is a patient man.